This is a CKTZ News update. As the drought level 4 continues, and some shallow well owners are concerned about their water supply, CKTZ News asked an expert about Cortez Island's aquifer. Dr. Diana Allen is the head of the Groundwater Resources Research Group at Simon Fraser University. While she has not been to Cortez, Allen has been working on islands like Hornby, Maine, Saturna, and Salt Spring since 1996. The most alarming concern on Cortez is that people drilling wells could punch holes in the island's aquifer and cause it to collapse. This idea was expressed during an interview last week, during which John Preston also pointed out that what used to be a year-round wetland in Whaletown has been drying up every summer for the past 5 years. CKTZ News contacted Red Williams, a well driller from Parksville, who serves the surrounding area on Vancouver Island, the Sunshine Coast, Quadra, and Cortez Islands. While he sometimes hears this fear expressed, Williams says he's never actually encountered an aquifer that collapsed. The main problem he has seen is that some shallow wells go dry. He said this is an ongoing problem, but there are ways that homeowners can extend their water supply, and the aquifer is replenished when the rains come.
I agree with him,
said Allen.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends what somebody considers to be collapsing an aquifer. Taken in a scientific perspective, that to me suggests subsidence. And when you take groundwater out of an aquifer that consists of interlayers of sand and clay, let's say, there is the potential for the clay to lose whatever water it has in it and squish. And so that can cause subsidence. So it's a form of dewatering. And once the clay layers would squish together, because the water's been sucked out of them, it's like taking a syringe and sucking the water out of the clay. It's the aquifer that you're interested in, that you're trying to get the water out of. Sometimes there can be a connection to the clay units and they would squish, and ultimately that could result in subsidence. Subsidence is you have to take a lot of water out. And places like Mexico City, for example, California in the Central Valley, where huge quantities of water are taken out, or also oil and gas. So where oil deposits, for example, have been taken out of deep sedimentary rocks, you can end up with subsidence. And in some cases, subsidence can be huge, 9 meters in Mexico and the Central Valley, for example. But for small aquifers that you would find on Cortez Island, I don't think that subsidence would be a real problem at the scale of the island. But it really depends on, you know, how the sands and the clays are interbedded and whether or not there's enough groundwater pumping to actually cause that subsidence to take place. But in my view, I don't think subsidence would be a problem in those types of sediments. And certainly where there's bedrock, then no, there wouldn't be any type of collapse of the aquifer taking place. I've never heard of any such thing in British Columbia.
Taking CKTZ News on a virtual tour of the Cortez Island aquifers on the IMAP BC website, Allen discovered that all three of the aquifers that cover much of Whaletown, numbers 843, 844, and 845, are in bedrock, where subsidence is not an issue. Aquifer 841, which feeds most of the land between Manson's Landing and Settle Point,
that's sand and gravel. So glacial origin, as when the glaciers were all melting, they would have dumped a whole bunch of sand and gravel on this point. And this is actually a confined aquifer. So there's some clay over the top of it that is providing natural protection to that aquifer. So this would be a good quality aquifer.
Aquifers 842 and 846, which feed the area between Manson's Landing and Cortez Bay, are in rock.
So it's really only that southern tip that has this sand and gravel aquifer. All the other areas of the island that have been mapped with aquifers, they all show bedrock.
The aquifer is feeding more than three-quarters of Cortez Island, Tiber Bay, Squirrel Cove, and all the lands in the north are not mapped. Allen explained that this would have been because the area is so sparsely settled. The 2002 Geological Survey of Cortez Island map shows that most of Squirrel Cove is sand, mud, and gravel, and the rest of northern Cortez is primarily rock. So what about that wetland that used to be filled with water year-round and has dried up the last few summers?
That's where climate change comes in.
Though she's not been to Cortez Island, Ellen has periodically worked on islands like Hornby, Maine, Saturna, and Salt Spring since 1996.
At the end of the last glaciation, some 12,000 years ago, those islands were covered by probably 2 kilometers of ice. And the weight of the ice depressed the landscape, so pushed all the islands down. And then very quickly that ice melted. Within a few thousand years, it was basically gone from the whole south coast region here. And it melted so quickly that the rebound of those islands took much longer. So they were below sea level for a period of time because sea level would have risen and the islands were still below. And eventually they popped up. But during the time that they were submerged for probably 400 or 500 years, that was enough time for the ocean water to get in and salinate. And once they pop back up again, of course, rainwater comes in and it starts to push out that salty water. And for the most part, the salty water has been pushed out entirely. But there are pockets of this older saline water that are generally deeper down or perhaps in the finer grained rocks that are not as permeable. That's what we were targeting when we drilled that deep research well on Salt Spring. We wanted to see if we could get some of that old water. And it is fairly deep down. So most people have their drinking water wells relatively shallow, maybe 100 meters or so, or less than that. So they're tapping into water that's replenished on an annual basis. But there is some very deep, older water down there that is of Pleistocene, post-Pleistocene age.
And we have that on Cortez as well?
Well, as I said, I'm not really familiar with Cortez. It seems like the topography is not very high. If the island was submerged, which I'm sure it was at the end of the last glaciation, then yes, there would have been salt water in there when the islands were being formed, probably.
Allen did not know if there was still salt water at the bottom of Cortez Island's aquifers, but drilled wells sometimes encounter salt water.
You put a pumping well in and the water from the ocean just says, oh, well, I'll just go right towards that well. So any wells that might be nearer to the coast, or if they're in the middle of the island, maybe they're drilled a little bit deeper. There is a natural saltwater wedge that underlies all islands. If you drill down deep enough, you will hit saltwater. So the higher the topography, like Salt Spring, the deeper that seawater is, and the less topography, the shallower that interface is with the seawater underneath. So that's why, you know, on an island like that, having a whole bunch of little shallow wells is a good thing. People in the Caribbean, they don't even drill vertical wells. They use horizontal trenches. In the Bahamas, for example, they excavate long trenches and skim the fresh water off the top of the aquifer and collect it in a ditch system and convey that water sort of gradient, down gradient, and collect it in a cistern or something like that. And that's, they avoid drilling because that salt water is very shallow if you have low topography islands. Even on some of the peninsulas on the Gulf Islands, like East Point on Saturna, which is the southernmost tip of Saturna Island, it's very low topography, and they have a huge problem with salinity because the salt water is relatively shallow, and it's a dry part of the island, so it doesn't get a lot of groundwater recharge. And so I would say, I don't know, every third well in on that peninsula probably has a salinity problem. Same with parts of Hornby.
One of our neighbors, well, actually, she's not one of the people on Cortez, is almost 100% dependent on rainwater catchment. She doesn't do it with drinking water because she doesn't have the filter to, for example, take out bird excrement that could get into her system. But she stores 7,000 gallons. And unlike some of the shallow wells, which are, some of them are a little bit worried right now. But anyways, her storage tanks have about, I'm going to guess, 3,500 to 4,000 gallons still in them. So they're set for months.
It's a great idea. I think more people should be doing a combination of rainwater collection and groundwater, mixing the two. You might as well take advantage of the roof that you have and collect that water, if for nothing else than watering a vegetable garden or using it for flushing toilets, washing laundry. There's a whole bunch of uses of water that don't require good quality groundwater.
You've been listening to an interview with Diana Allen, with Dr. Diana Allen from the You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Diana Allen, head of the Groundwater Resources Research Group at Simon Fraser University.